Hey, it's me, American Mike, no longer Canadian Mike. I'm back in the States, and what timing, seeing as this episode is dropping on January 18th, 2021, and there's a big event on Wednesday. Hope it goes well and smoothly. But anyway, let's get into the next episode of this podcast. Before we continue my first ever journey through the Harry Potter series, just a few quick announcements. First, from a programming perspective, this is the final episode about Puffs the Play. We will soon be going on to do the Fantastic Beasts movies, but in between, we're going to have a special one-off episode with guest lecturer Eric Silver talking about a topic that is near and dear to his heart and something that we have talked about on the podcast a little bit before, but we're going to devote a whole episode to it because I think it's important and it's an important critical discussion. And we haven't really done that explicitly on Potterless, and I think it'll be a fun thing. So stay tuned for that. That is going to be a good time. Also, coming up in the near future, we're going to be doing a donation raffle fundraiser again for Potterless, trying to put some good into the world in 2021 because it has not been off to a great start so far. And similarly to how we ran the Potterless donation duel, it'll involve fundraising and me matching some donations and giving out prizes to random people. So stay tuned for more information about that. If you want to follow Potterless across social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, I'll be posting about it there. So that is coming in the near future, and I'm very excited about it. And speaking of things I am very excited about, we have new members of our team over at patreon.com/potterless who are supporting the show and keeping it going. So shout out to Alita Hall, Karim Gunnar, and Hannah Vance. Also, shout out to Violet Weasley, who upgraded their pledge, and a correction for Joe Sander, who upgraded to the producer-level patron status a couple of weeks ago, and I somehow didn't get their name into the list of producers. Speaking of that list of producers, I want to thank all of our existing producer-level patrons. Vicky, Christine, Aaron, Clown, Marchismo, Juan, Rosemary, Maria, Lisa, Audra, Eleanor, Nikita, Rachel, Zachary, Alex, John, Noel, Claire, Rory, Veronica, Lotta, Noah, Tracy, Colleen, Jennifer, Justin, Jacob, Maya, Mark, Polly, Zina, Harlan, Noelia, Nikki, Kine, Amanda, Kafir, Sarah, Marta, Maya, Floor, Georgia, Skyla, Adele, Professor Threat, Ellie, Michael, Kelly, Kerry, Connie, Jen, Nedry, Will, Marcos, Marik, Ashton, Brittany, Phelan, the Meadows family, Ginny, Heather, Kevin, Jarl, Peta, Janin, Callahan, Leah, Bella, Melanie, Becca, Reese, Adam, Joseph, Lily's mom, Madison, Tonk, Sabrina, Sophia, Farzan, Melanie, Matt, Okamahime, Bony Pony, Kelsey, Rike, Taylor, Megan, Riley, Laurel, Erica, Miranda, Landon, Kendra, Natanya, Yogan, Darcy, Sandra, Craig, Lior, Demi, Michelle, Callista, Jennifer, Henrique, Delkis, Katrina, Casey, Megan, Zat, Jack, Sophia, Dane, Robin, Chick, Mermaid, Dedekin, Zalaria, Gregory, Stan, Kawkaw, Nina, Ribbon, Brittany, Ashley, Gavin, Jack, Serenity, Emily, Haley, Sabrina, Jenna, Laura, Gila, Eileen, Annette, Kirsten, Hufflepuff, Brett, Hunter, Mary, Artemis, Trans People Are People, Samantha, Nina, Tatiana, Taylor, Karis, Vomit Spiders, Tony, Joe, Punkfish, Rochelle, Wire Warrior, Catherine, Steamed Nuggets, and Can't I Potter? Never poorly aim their car when they're approaching a gas station pump in a way such that they have to go up and back and up and back and do like an 18-point turn just to move their car over a little bit horizontally so that they can actually reach the pump. If you want to be like one of these amazing patrons and get access to bonus episodes, director's commentary, monthly live streams, the Discord, and more, you can head on over to patreon.com/potterless. But without further ado, let's get into episode 160 of Potterless, the sixth part of our Puffs coverage, guest starring Katie Nutman. Hello, Internet, and welcome back to another episode of Potterless, the tale of a 28-year-old man who never read the Harry Potter series as a kid. He read them as an adult, and then he watched Puffs, the play. He saw it live. He saw it on a laptop screen a couple times, and now he's talking about it with someone who has the book. Look at this. We've hit the trifecta of Puffs, and that person, once again, to close out the discussion, is Katie Nutman. Katie, how's it going?
Hi, friends. Like I mentioned a few minutes ago, we are in a very different spot this week than we were last week.
Yeah.
What a fascinating experience it has been.
You know, we're getting the full spectrum of the world across these Puffs episodes, where we recorded the first ones in late 2020. Then we recorded our last episode on January 4th, which was a very different time than today, January 11th, because, you know, everything.
Sometimes it takes 7 books to create a journey. Sometimes it just takes 7 days.
Pretty much. I mean, we 2 days was all it took. What a time. But here we are. I want to focus on happier things like
Puffs.
Yes,
absolutely.
That's why I'm wearing the long sleeve shirt from the improvised Nancy Drew show that you directed, that I acted in. Was a very fun time. My favorite bit from that, by the way, was anytime I was Ned Nickerson, the football stud himbo boyfriend of Nancy, across the play, I would just list that I was every position on the football team. And that was always my favorite running joke, is like, I started as the quarterback, and then the next scene I'd be like, oh, the coach is making me be the kicker now too. And it would just grow and grow, and it made me very happy.
Well, Ned Nickerson is clearly the most talented football player of all time.
Seriously.
And the fact that he hasn't been inducted into the NFL Hall of Fame at this point is really just a disappointment.
It's a shame. It's an absolute travesty. I vote for him every year in my Hall of Fame ballot that I definitely get. So, you know, one day he'll get through.
Right? He just brings such a positive representation to something that is so wonderful. And I don't think it matters that he's a fictitious football player. I think it's important that he gets the recognition that he deserves.
And that's why we will be starting the hashtag, #JusticeForNed, because he needs to be inducted into the National Football Hall of Fame. Anyway, Harry Potter. So we've got Puffs to finish up. So let's finish up the Puffs discussion. When we last left our heroes, they were in the middle of dealing with Xavier. She had our trio tied up and then untied. And then Wayne recapped the story of Helga Hufflepuff founding the Puffs. And now we go back from this little story segue into Wayne assioing the wands back to him. And Megan then telling Xavier to go back to, quote, what's his name? We try not to say. So I think this is like the third different iteration of his name, and I just absolutely love it.
I'm going to call it the lack of consistency with this particular trope, right? That he has so many different ways of saying, not saying the name. I greatly appreciate that because it really shows a depth of creativity.
It does, yeah. It reminds me of a fun improv bit where you're just trying to continually one up and say, okay, how do we do this another different way? And you're right. By having the consistency of we never say his name, but we always find a different way to say it, it becomes very fun and I very much appreciate it.
It feels like an inside joke with the audience as well,
yeah,
right? It's
one of those
moments where we can all recognize that this is something important and we're all on this journey of creation together.
Mm-hmm. It's fantastic. So Xavier leaves. Wayne and Oliver are absolutely ecstatic. They say, quote, everyone's going to know about this, but Megan is very sad. So she says, that was a lot to take in, hugs Oliver, and then Wayne does the I'm coming in bit that this trio has. And basically the unspoken understanding that Wayne and Oliver come to is that we are so excited about what we just did, but because of Megan, we are telling no one. And that is just such a true form of friendship and such a non-Gryffindor approach to the situation. It is the least prideful thing that they could do.
Right? And I loved it because to me, it felt like an absolutely clear call for, I need some therapy. I need to work out this. This is a lot to take in. And the self-awareness that comes with that to be able to acknowledge and like, you know what? I just did a big thing and there's good feelings and there's bad feelings and there's so much to process about this. And so then it just becomes a celebration of friends and understanding and that like, yeah, we did a big thing, but also we can put that aside to take care of each other. That is such a message that we need right now. That A, acknowledge that we need help when we need help, and B, help your friends when they need help too. It's just so beautiful.
Mm-hmm. It's great. I really like it. I like the message that it sends so much.
Without taking too much, you know, seriousness away from this, right? We have this moment. It's very beautiful and tender. And then there's a lightsaber. Yeah. And we're suddenly immediately back into the world of humor and parody and farce. In what's leading into, I think, the greatest moment of farce in the entire show.
I think what makes Puffs so good at putting in the sentimental moments is that they don't harp on them and they very quickly go back to the comedy. These moments feel more earned and they don't feel like they're stretched. And I think that's what makes them work. I very recently watched Wonder Woman 1984, despite trying to tell Kelly, so many people have said this is bad, Kelly, are you sure? And she really wanted to watch it. She loved the first one. And very quickly, and we realized this was a terrible film. But spoiler alerts, in case anyone is dying to watch this quote-unquote movie, the part at the end when Wonder Woman tries to give this big impassioned speech to save the world is so cheesy and it's so long and it's so out of character. It is the complete opposite of something like this, where this one, it's such a quick moment, but they say everything that needs to be said about it in two looks at Megan and one hug. They achieve everything.
Yep.
It's perfect.
And I'm 100% right there with you on Wonder Woman. It was, I knew it was terrible going into it, but I wanted to be like, well, maybe these are just neckbeards that are upset that a woman's a hero. And
right,
that's
right.
Why it's getting all of these awful reviews. And it's not. I don't call myself a film critic because I'm not officially a film critic, but I'm definitely a critic and I'm not a neckbeard. And it's awful and disappointing. And I really hope that there's a Wonder Woman 3.
Wonder Woman 2006, where yeah. they listen to Kelly Clarkson's Walk Away.
I might be okay with a Wonder Woman 2021, where perhaps a certain politician is defeated through the powers of feminism. But my hope mostly for a Wonder Woman 3 is that it will show that women can make a shitty movie and then still also get another sequel.
Yeah.
Because that will be a true moment of triumph for me.
That would be very nice. But I gotta say, shout out to Pedro Pascal, the one fun moment in the movie. What a lad. Just having the most fun on screen in every scene.
The way he chews the scenery, though, I'm a little concerned about his dental care. Like, did he have to have a special onset dentist to make sure that his teeth were not damaged? With the way he was going through all of that, just those big feelings so frequently. So I hope he gets the cares that he needs for that as well.
So the trio begins to leave, but they pass by the mirror of the Erised, or the weird mirror backwards, as they call it in Puff's land. They all see themselves, but of course, Wayne has a lightsaber. So the rest of the year, they take the time to focus on magic. And one of the ways that they show them focusing on magic is bringing back the, oh, he fixed the glasses that I was holding joke, which is such a fun bit that happens throughout the play. I very much appreciate that being the proof of legitimacy at magic, is this very obvious not magic trick.
To say nothing of the fact then that they celebrate by saying, we have officially mastered all spells. Up to grade 3, kind of undercutting the seriousness of it. But also, hey, progress is progress. Let's celebrate the small wins that we can get. And that includes being able to fix glasses.
Mm-hmm. Look, did you brush your teeth before noon today? Accomplishment.
Yes.
You did it.
Did you brush your teeth after you finished your orange juice today? Extra accomplishment.
So we go from this happiness into sadness, which is Dumbledore dies. And they very much do a scene that resembles how they do the movie, with everyone pointing their wands all at the sky. It's pretty heartfelt. It's nicely done. It's quick. They go past it pretty soon after, and they are into the next summer. And I love what they've done here is everyone's using AOL Instant Messenger now, which, fantastic choice. What a choice.
Right? If you have Muggle-born students, they're not going to ignore the fact that the best way to communicate with each other is through instant messaging. So bringing the wizarding world into the Muggle world, I think, is a fascinating blend and acknowledges the fact that the Muggle world still exists.
Mm-hmm. I always love when they actually have a 90s reference, and I love the usernames that they have. Wayne's username is Not a Wizard 1997. Oliver's is MathMagician314159, and Megan reluctantly says that her username is PurplePrincess2000. Now, Katie, not to dox you,
but
did you have an AOL Instant Messenger with an embarrassing username? Because I had two. I started with MJS Dude, which are my initials followed by the word dude, and then I tried to get Shoob17 because that's what I had on a lot of other social media, but someone had taken it already. So for AIM, I had to be Shoobs1717, which was strange for me.
Oh, that's what a disappointment. I don't think I had AOL Instant Messenger. I used, was it Microsoft MSN?
Yeah, MSN.
Okay. I'm trying to remember what it was, but most of my like emails and things like that from when I was in middle school and high school, it was Spot Lightning.
Whoa.
I know, right? Hear me out. I work at a Girl Scout camp. My camp name is Spotlight because I am a theater folk, but I didn't want to be called Thespian. And so Spotlight was what came up there. And then, hear me out. Are you ready for this? Lightning, because Harry has a lightning scar on his head, and it was like a portmanteau that I could squish together, and I could be Spotlightning.
I really like it, and I'm glad that this tangent now officially has context that makes sense for the Harry Potter podcast that we're on right now.
Right, totally. AOL, full circle. I've been a Harry Potter nerd since day one.
One thing I do actually miss from AOL Instant Messenger that I wish we still had in social media, I would love away messages to come back.
Yes.
I would very much enjoy to do that because my mother finds a way. She hasn't done it this episode, but it probably will happen. She finds a way to call or text me during every single podcast recording that I do. So if I could somehow put an away message on my phone that's like, Mom, I'm recording a podcast. It's my job. Please wait.
Have you used, there's the driving function.
I love the driving one. That's great. But doesn't the driving one only kick in when you're moving faster than 30 miles an hour?
I don't know. I think you can manually turn it on. Ah. And if you manually turn it on when you are podcasting, and then you can change the message to say, I'm driving a podcast right now. I will get back to you as soon as I can. Then manually turn it off when you're done. And that way your mom won't fear that you're like dead in a ditch somewhere. Not that Naturally. New York really has ditches either, but still, right? Maybe you're not dead in a subway crash.
We've got the things in the sidewalks, the sewer, great looking steam vents for the subway. That's basically the city version of a ditch, yeah.
A gutter, right? so that way your mom won't think that you're dead in a gutter somewhere. She knows that you're podcasting and you can get back to her whenever you are no longer driving a podcast.
This also makes me want to get a bumper sticker for my future car that says, I'd rather be driving my podcast or my other car is a podcast.
Yes. Yes, please. And of course, it will be violently purple, right?
Oh, naturally.
Okay,
I will say, I have gone from before starting this podcast, purple is probably my least favorite color, to now I unironically enjoy purple. I started from, I don't like purple, to, oh yeah, I'll get some purple stuff as a joke, to buying shoes that are purple, not for the joke, but because they look good.
Yes, that is what we call growth.
So Oliver has the Hermione problem of not being able to go back to school to protect his parents. So he tried to wipe their memories, but instead he turned their heads into oranges. So, you know, same thing,
who
right?
Who hasn't faced that problem before?
Naturally. I'm sure the spells sound very similar.
Yeah.
Then we have an interesting scene when they finally get back to school, which is Bippy. And I might be biased here because I find Dobby annoying until he becomes the nicest person ever once he starts caring for Winky and everything. But Bippy, I think, plays on the annoyingness of Dobby. And it is a fun way for them to make the joke of, right, we haven't had Dobby this whole time, so let's bring in Bippy as the pseudo Dobby. And then the whole joke will be, I've been here the entire time, but no, I actually haven't. But it just felt a little unnecessary for me for something that wasn't that funny. But it also could just be me not liking this brand of humor.
I do wish Bippy had shown up earlier.
Okay.
Because, again, I absolutely am 100% on this, like, book two Dobby is the worst. Like, why are mm-hmm. you here? What the heck is happening? Why is this going on? Why do we have to suffer through Dobby? And then, you know, reading the book and it's probably midnight because, well, it's probably 3 a.m. because midnight releases and I'm just crying and sobbing and like watching it in the movie theater. And I'm just like sniffling and snorking my way into my like blanket that I snuck into the theater. And it's just horrible, right? So Dobby also shows incredible character growth that we get to experience, but we don't get to see that with Bippy. So I think the thing that makes Dobby's death so tragic is the fact that we saw that growth in him. But with Bippy, we just get annoying and then annoying in death.
Right.
That's a missed opportunity that we could have had funny, annoying Bippy. We could have had characters annoyed at Bippy and then character Bippy making this huge gesture at the end that we're like, oh, wait, Bippy wasn't annoying. Bippy was a hero. But then again, kind of touching on it with that same like, oh, we're having this moment. Great, moving on, that we've seen in lots of these other kind of emotional heartfelt moments too.
Yeah, it just wasn't my favorite. I did appreciate one of the rhyming lines because Bippy sings a Bippy song and the rhyming line of saying something about where we're going to go on adventures. I'm Bippy, your friend, I'm indentured.
Yes.
I did find that to be a fun rhyme. And it's one of those like once they say adventure, my brain just starts going, and before they even start the line, it's like, oh, they might rhyme with yep. what
and
I think,
then and then they do it. There are also a couple of different options in here, too.
Ooh.
The stage directions, it says, Bippy bursts into a little Bippy song. Feel free to use an option below or make one up of your own. It should be mildly annoying, somewhat adorable, and no more than 20 seconds long for all of our sakes, please. And after the first one, which doesn't necessarily have anything specific in it, you know, Bippy, we all say yippee. Did I mention I'm your best friend? And then spoken, verse 2 of 20, sung, I am Bippy. So the idea that there is so much more that could be cut off, I really appreciate. And that's, I think, had we had Bippy introduced earlier as well, and then also bringing Bippy in. So bring Bippy in book two. Then bring Bippy back in book five when we've got SPEW so that we can continue to see, ah, yes, verse 15 of 37. Oh, God, there's more of them. The verses are growing. We can definitely expand this. and see how annoying Bippy is. Then when we finally get to this closure, I think that would just help us out a little bit more and make it feel, make Bippy feel more like a character instead of a punchline.
Definitely. I agree. So the school year continues and you pretty much just fast forward to Harry coming back and then it being the Battle of Hogwarts. I was hoping that there would be a little bit of, oh, hey, they're actually at the school while Harry's gone. This is something we didn't get to see. But I also get that there's a lot of things that they have to cover in the play. So they kind of yada yada over it. But Harry returns and Harry is interrupted by Voldemort. And in place of Voldemort's spell where his voice is in everyone's ear, he just has a megaphone, and he is just up in the second floor of the theater. And when I saw this live, I was seated in the second floor of the theater, and Voldemort was very close to me, and it was so funny to witness the whole thing. And I'm very excited for an interview I'm going to post later with James Foley, who played the role of Cedric and Voldemort. And James had to explain how challenging it was to get up there, because it's not like there is a backstage entrance to that part. It's just a portion of the theater where people sit. So you have to just work your way through the theater. So part of me does like to think if there was someone who was seeing a different play and was walking to the bathroom, you just see a grown man in a bathrobe and a green swimmer's cap with tape on his nose walking to the stairs would be very fun.
I also have to think, though, too, how much fun would that be to be as an actor, knowing that as soon as you step out of your backstage area, even if you are not on stage, but you're still, you know, in the lobby or in a staircase or something like that, and you walk by somebody who is out getting concessions or whatever it may be, right? The opportunity to interact in character as Voldemort in a bathrobe, like, that just seems so delightful and fun, and I would love to play with that.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite things about theaters is learning the intricacies of their hidey holes and cubbies and staircases. And theaters are just such fascinating buildings because so many people only see them from the front of house perspective, right? We see the fancy lobby, we see the chandeliers hanging, we see the pretty paint job, we see all of the ushers in their bow ties and their fancy clothes, and right, it feels like an elevated experience. And then the secret when you are a theater performer is that you also get to see the backstage brick walls, painted gum stuck underneath things, which is gross. Don't ever do that, by the way. But right, there's this kind of like dirty underground sense of this backstage feeling. Mm-hmm. I love when those two worlds get to collide, whether it's because of set design or light design, that the audience gets a little bit of sneak peek at the backstage of things, or people who are interested and show up for backstage tours, or all of these different things that kind of peel back the magic a little bit. But maybe that's, again, just me being a theater nerd. And I'm like, oh, that's how they did that special effect, or that's how they did that kind of thing. So getting to see Voldemort walking through a lobby trying to get into place for his next scene would just be one of those magic moments for me that I'd be like, oh, something good is coming. So very exciting.
So Voldemort launches into this big monologue, which becomes a joke of him not realizing that the megaphone is still on, and he continues. They had a lot of different options for this monologue, which I'm sure your book has like descriptions of the 20 something options that they have.
There are 9 different options. Yes, I do have 9 monologue options here. The one that I think is my favorite is when he goes, now's a good a time of any to break out my type 5. Say, have you ever noticed the differences between wizards and witches? tough crowd. That's a no on that. Say, British food. What's the deal with that, huh? I love this just classic making fun of stereotypical comedy. I think it's fantastic.
So the Puffs stand up for Harry against Pansy Parkinson, which is nice. It's something that actually happens in the books. You love to see Puffs just show it and not dunk on it. They just present it as it is, as a good thing that the Puffs did. And Ernie specifically, as he does in the books, specifically asks about staying behind and helping Harry when the kids are supposed to be ushered out of the school. What's great about Harry when he actually leaves to go figure out how to defeat Voldemort, he just says, all right, I'm off to find a tiara, and just leaves the stage.
Well, and if you think about it, that's really what would have happened.
It's what,
right?
He was doing. Yeah.
He shows up, everything is in shambles. Suddenly we're going to fight, I guess. Okay, cool. Let's move into this. Wait, Harry's going to find a tiara? Okay.
And he never says it in the book. I did always find it to be comedic, though, because I thought that the ending of book 7 was incredible.
Yes.
But the one thing that took me out of it is when Harry shows up, everyone's hyped, and then he's like, thanks so much for fighting for me and staying behind, guys. Anyway, I'm out of here. I got to find something. I can't tell you what it is, and I don't know where it is. Hopefully I find it. Like, anyone there would be like, what the fuck is happening?
Right? It's not exactly the classic definition of leadership that we would have expected. Mm-mm. You know, here Harry is leading the charge. We're all storming. Maybe that's not the right word to use this week. I'm sorry. I was going to say storming the castle, but that's definitely not what we're... Too close.
So many idioms are just getting destroyed.
Right? I can't use that. And it makes me think back to Princess Bride, too, when they're like, bye, boys, have fun storming the castle. And now, like, oh, man, those boys really did have fun storming the castle, didn't they? Aye. But again, this idea that Harry is the leader, we are following Harry into battle, and following Harry into battle really means children going off to fight a war while Harry plays hide and seek.
Hooray! So the Puffs, they talk about it a little bit and they kind of realize, hey, maybe we should just leave because we are not very good at magic. What are we going to contribute? But then Leanne, in the beginning of her redemption arc, gives a motivational speech. It's fine. I think it's still very of the Leanne character traits that I don't find particularly enjoyable. But we get a later Leanne scene that's absolutely fantastic. But I do appreciate that you have someone trying to stand up for what probably would be the conversation that 17-year-old kids would have. Imagine being a high schooler and your options are, I can just bounce, or I can try to fight this war that I don't really have too much of a stake in. Like, it's a normal thing for teenagers to be scared and want to leave. So the fact that it took a motivational speech to get them over the edge, I think makes sense.
It definitely hits kind of home in a weird place for me as well, because I'm a high school teacher, and we literally have drills when we are in school about what to do in a combat situation. And we watch videos yearly and we talk about how to run, hide, and fight. We talk about using things like staplers and textbooks as weapons. And it gets really dark. And I'm not going to try and drag this whole thing down into that avenue because I think it could get really dark.
Totally.
But again, we're literally talking about 17-year-olds and the strategy that we are supposed to teach them. The number one thing is get out. Get out of the building, get out as fast as you can, and just go, because that is the safe thing to do. And yet here, all of our Puff friends are making the decision not to do the safe thing, which would usually be the puffiest thing to do, but they're making the decision to stay, which is not a smart thing. It's not a snake thing. It is a brave thing. And I think that that bravery comes from that loyalty and that sense of belonging and that sense of camaraderie that they develop as Puffs. And I love the fact that we get to see loyalty and bravery being so intertwined in this way.
Definitely. And I think they bring this point home and the realization that they get to using dialogue. Megan says, we might die. Are we all willing to die for Harry? And Wayne says, we won't die for Harry. We'll die for each other. And I teared up watching this.
Yep.
And I think it's the correct sentiment. That's what it really comes down to. And that's the stuff that if I was in the situation, I hope I would realize this, that it's not about fighting Harry's battle. It's so much bigger than Harry. Yes, Voldemort is targeting Harry, but it's much beyond just a feud between two people. It is the fight of good versus evil. It is the fight of acceptance versus non-acceptance.
Right.
And the fact that Wayne brings up the point that it's that they would die for each other shows that loyalty is at the core of what they stand for as Puffs, and that this fight is not just about one person. It's about everyone. And because they are loyal, it is their duty as Puffs to stay back and to fight.
In order to be loyal, we have to be brave.
Yeah.
We have to stand up for those ideals that we think are right or those people that we think are right. And sometimes it can be a lot easier to ignore these issues, whether it's a magical wizard who is bald and doesn't wear shoes, or it's racism and bigotry in our community. It takes both loyalty and bravery to stand up for what we believe in. And I think that is ultimately the crux of this, is that, not the horcrux, if you will, but the intersection of everything and why this story is so important to all of us, is that we see ourselves in this book, those of us that want to fight for justice and fairness and equality and to be seen. And that's why, as young kids, it affected us, those of us that read it when we were children, right? That's why it affected us so strongly, and why it still impacts adults, why it is this multi-billion-dollar organization with theme parks and spin-off plays and all of these pieces that have come together is because it is a story of good versus evil. And no matter how you are fighting that evil, we all see ourselves in one way or another in this story.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this is something, this particular scene and what you just talked about reminds me of something I saw recently that struck a chord with me as a straight white man trying to fight against white privilege in any way that I can. I saw a post about the 8 white identities by Barner Hess. Apologies if I'm mispronouncing this, but it's got this list of like the range of being a white supremacist at the worst down to being a white abolitionist at the bottom. And I think the crucial things towards the bottom is being the difference between someone that's white critical and a white traitor. And to be a white traitor, defined by the white identities here, it says that you actively refuse complicity, you name what's going on, your intention is to subvert white authority and tell the truth at whatever cost, you need them to dismantle institutions. So the fact of doing it at whatever cost, that's like the next step that is hard for some people to take. It's easy to just post about something or say that you are upset by this or whatever. But to go to that next level and not worry about the cost, not worry about family members getting upset at you, people unfollowing you on social media, whatever it is.
Losing your job and being kicked out of family members' houses or, right? That
right.
sense of what do you stand to lose? Are you willing to lose it in order to promote equality? And I will be the first one to admit I am also white and cis. And so this has absolutely been a year of learning for me and growing. And I hope I get to continue along that journey of learning and growing. But yeah, there has definitely been moments where I'm thinking about like, what can I say that won't cost me my job or get me in trouble with my boss? You know, how can I make sure that Thanksgiving still stays on the rails while making my presence and my displeasure known? Right. So what sacrifices am I willing to make and where does that line fall? And then looking at that and being like, oh, right. Am I really doing everything that I can? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I saw that recently too and definitely thought it was a very fascinating way to consider looking at things. So
yeah. I mean, and obviously the stakes in this particular instance are a little different than an uncomfortable conversation you might have to have versus legitimate death. But, you know, it's taking the readings and it's adapting these stories into how we feel. And it's something that I've tried to do. And on a related note, it's something I've had to come to grips with J.K. Rowling and all that. Like,
right?
Whatever repercussions I face later down the road and stuff I've already faced from people refusing to listen to the show or whatever it is, like, there's more important things at stake. And promoting equality, I think, is one of them.
I have come to realize that I will probably never get to drink butterbeer again. Because I don't want my money going back to...
It's just cream soda with butterscotch on top. You can make it.
Okay, good to know. What I meant was like there's the... you can get them at the theme parks, right? But I'm probably not going to go to the theme parks because I don't want to necessarily buy the merchandise. And I'm just going to have to craft myself all of my Harry Potter merchandise from now on, which is fine. Love crafting. It's great. Mm-hmm. But also like whether it's losing family members or losing butterbeer, there's a spectrum here and choices that we get to make. And I love that our characters made the choice to stay with this super dramatic wands in, everybody together, unity, Mighty Ducks kind of moment. Am I using that right? Is there a Mighty Ducks moment like this?
You are correct.
Okay, great. Excellent. I still haven't seen it.
Many people did appreciate your duck version of Mighty Ducks, though. So you are gaining support of the listeners.
Yes.
Katie is winning over the listeners. Past Mike, you're correct. And you know who else has already won over the listeners? Me, Editing Mike. They love me. And you know what else the listeners love? It's our next segment of the show that we like to call Wingardium Adridosa. Today's episode of Potterless is brought to you by Audible. Hey, it's the first sponsor of Potterless. They're back. Welcome back, Audible. Let's say hypothetically that you want to read a book, but you can't be bothered to read a book. That takes too much time and effort. What could you do instead? You could use Audible. Audible is the leading provider of spoken word entertainment and audiobooks. They have all sorts of books. They also have podcasts and original programming. They also recently launched Audible Plus, which gets you full access to their Plus catalog. It's filled with thousands upon thousands of originals, audiobooks, podcasts, and ad-free versions of popular shows, as well as exclusive series. There is an audiobook on Audible that I recommend. There's a book, I have the physical version. It's a book by Desus and Miro, who are two comedians, podcasters, late-night TV show hosts now, that wrote a book called God Level Knowledge Darts. It's a comedic advice book, and the two of them are so funny, and having the two authors do the audiobook is fun, because with the audiobook, instead of reading the book and thinking, I wonder how they would deliver deliver these lines. Now you can actually hear how these two guys would make the jokes. It's very fun. I have the book. The audiobook is fun too. And that is a book that you could get using Audible. So if you want to listen to a bunch of great content, you can visit audible.com/potterless or text potterless to 500-500 to start your 30-day free trial. Again, that's audible.com/potterless, or you can text the word potterless to the number 500-500 and you will get access to a 30-day free trial. So go to audible.com/potterless or text potterless to 500-500, get hooked up with an Audible 30-day free trial, and then instead of reading a book, which is daunting, you can listen to stuff instead, and then you can multitask. Hooray! And now you'll hear words from a few sponsors who make it feasible for me to be a full-time podcaster. Some of these ads will be read by me, others of them won't. The ones that aren't are inserted locally, so if you live internationally, don't be surprised if you hear an ad in your country's native language. And once those ads are complete, we'll get back to this episode of Potterless. And of course, in classic Puffs fashion, they take this heartfelt moment and immediately return to jokes, but in a fun way, where Wayne says, quote, "We're going to fight alongside the Braves and the Smarts and, well, not the Snakes, because they've been officially acknowledged as evil," which is super true. That is exactly what it boils down to in the book. And I love them calling out exactly what happened.
Also, the public acknowledgement of evil, that seems to be a really strong thread with this week as well, right? That we suddenly have a lot of people in our world that are deciding like, oh, right, we can't just let this happen anymore. We need to publicly acknowledge that this is not acceptable. So yeah, publicly acknowledge that they are evil. And then bringing it back to third or nothing and first or nothing, I also thought was very charming and great way to tie it back in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, we're not third or nothing. It's first or nothing. We're going in there to take out the bad guys.
It's great. And I will say for all the Slytherins out there, I feel bad about how the book was written about you. It is not fair that one of the houses just becomes bad guys. I think that is poor writing by J.K. Rowling.
Absolutely.
How interesting it could have been if one Slytherin stayed back would have been amazing, and I'm forever upset that that didn't happen. It is not fair to Slytherin House. Real life Slytherins are not book Slytherins. You don't have to feel bad.
100% with that. I have some incredible friends that are Slytherins, and I look at them and their ambition, and I'm like, okay, you go do all of these wonderful, incredible things that you're doing. I'm going to be a lump on the couch in my blanket nest, which is also not a very Gryffindor thing of me to do. But at the same time, recognizing that people are fully rounded and well-developed human beings, and that includes Slytherins and Hufflepuffs.
Mm-hmm.
We're not just Braves or Smarts. We are active, good people. One of my friends, who is actually a listener on the show, she said she recently retook the Pottermore quiz and was very upset that because she has like skeleton decor in her home, but she is also definitely not a Slytherin. And she was like, yeah, but Pottermore like put me in Slytherin and it's supposed to be official, but I just like, I don't believe it. And I was like, remember, you get to make the choice.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Shout out to her. And we all know you and see you in your heart for who you truly are, which is a skull-loving, well-rounded human being.
Amen. So then we get some fight scenes. They're fun. They're cool. There's music. There's a bunch of them. Everyone kind of gets their own little scene, which is fun. And then at one point, Harry gets the tiara and comes across and screams, "Yay, Harry!" as he achieves his tiara-related goal. And then we get a fun moment of math warrior Oliver entering when Megan mentions to Wayne that they're trying to find a particular angle to shoot a spell. Oliver comes in and says, "Sounds like you could use a protractor," which is one of my favorite things in the Harry Potter series, is that people enter scenes on dramatic lines all the time. So intentional or not, I love that this happened in Puffs, and you just get this great, intense math angle figuring out of Oliver, where I believe in the background there's music and then a very deep voice narrator going, "math," which is very fun.
I love this scene too. The whole unfolding of it with all of the doors slamming and the running and the ins and the outs. All of these different pieces I find fascinating because, again, they set it up as a farce from the very beginning. There are so many doors on that stage. There are so many entrances and exits. And that immediately says to anybody who has studied farcical theater that this is a farce. There should be more doors than there are main characters. And I want lots of them to open and close and slam. And that is exactly what this scene promises to me. And it is beautiful and also looks like complete and utter chaos to direct. For the entire year 7, the one note that I have for this battle is, this would be impossible without LED lights.
So many changes.
Right? It's so good because of all of the magic that is symbolized with the LEDs, all of the mood that is set. And I'm looking at this from a fixed perspective where I still have to use gels in my theater. And I'm like, cool, probably not going to happen in my theater because there's no way I can do this magic with some RO2 bastard amber and some R60 no color blue. It's just not going to happen. So shout out to my light designer friends out there.
A very small subset of the listeners just screamed in laughter and delight as they listen to this while they do their laundry.
Yes, I hope so. But it's just, it's so hard to create something like this. And really what drew me in is the lighting design in this because I'm a nerd, but also because it gave such energy and life to the scene. If you watch it again or have the opportunity to, and just imagine none of the lights changing and it's just a bunch of ding-dongs running around in cloaks with wands and sticks on stage with doors, it won't have that same energy and magic and right? You just won't be drawn in. You'll just be like, oh, they're actors. They're running around on doors. But the lighting design in this creates such a depth and such an excitement and such movement on stage that I was totally sucked in. And I was like, this is a farce and this is beautiful and I love it. And I will never be able to direct it until I get an LED board.
I agree. The lighting is huge. And I am only now realizing this, but I once saw Harry Potter improv and it was atrocious. And I'm now realizing that part of it was because the lack of lighting makes all of the spells really bad. But also, it did kind of turn into everyone has a gun in every scene, which, like, you never want to have a gun in any scene in improv, and now everyone has a gun all the time. And people are doing spells to, like, silence other people. It was just, like, every bad improv thing you are not supposed to do was in every single scene of this, and I just wanted to evaporate out of my seat. It was so uncomfortable.
I think that's because, I'll turn that back to, in the actual books and movies and stuff like that. I mean, yeah, everyone has a gun. Everyone does. They carry wands all the time. You have all of these options. But we have faith and trust in these characters that they have morals, not to just be complete assholes to each other. And they have conversations. And yes, absolutely some things happen where people get hung upside down from trees and their pants are torn off or things like that, right? There are absolutely misuse of magic in lots of different situations. But because it is being controlled in a situation where the author determines when it can and cannot be used, it leads to a strong narrative. Improv, if you're going to direct a show like that, you have to be able to police yourselves on stage or have a director that will teach you how to police yourselves on stage in terms of when that can happen and what is allowed, when is it allowed. You have to have a collective trust and feeling to establish that in terms of how will this further the story instead of how will this make me look cool?
Yeah, definitely. So back to the battle. Xavier comes in. Megan sends off Oliver and Wayne. And after a failed Avada Kedavra, Megan shows Xavier how easy it actually is to do. And Xavier says, oh, is it really that easy? And then just says it and accidentally kills a death buddy and then just drops all attempts at being cool and says, oh, my wizard god. And as the dead death buddy lays on the ground, someone carries him off and says, someone has to tell his evil wife and kids, which is so fantastic. So Xavier doesn't like how this feels. She realizes because of this that she is definitely a puff and says, quote, who would have thought that the people in the hoods and the masks would be so in the wrong?
There was a show that I was watching. I'm trying to remember if it was theater or movie. Oh, it's Something Rotten.
Ah.
They have Nostradamus, who is telling Nick Bottom, who is a playwright, the future, right? And they're kind of unveiling all of Broadway and pulling in a lot of different shows. And they're like, and then the Nazis come. And they're like, well, are the Nazis the good guys or the bad guys? And somebody leans over and goes, yeah, it feels important to get that one right, but we're not quite sure yet. And of course, because it is a comedy, they get it wrong in delightful, hysterical ways. But again, one of those very timely things that you're watching and you're like, ooh, yeah, no, it does feel really important to get that one right.
Mm-hmm.
So who would have thought?
Mm.
Hoods and masks.
Xavier tells Megan to just kill her. And Megan says, we'll just say you're a secret spy to save her from the embarrassment. Another death buddy comes in just as Megan and Xavier are hugging and Xavier kills them. And then she hands over her wand to Megan and is just like, you take this. I can't be trusted with this anymore.
Responsibility.
Yeah. So then a later scene has Sally being in the fight and she decides finally to put on her glasses so that she can contribute. And then she dies right after. Jay Finch jumps in front of a spell aimed at Ernie. And then Leanne has this epic fight scene where all of the camera angles are cool and she does all of these pirouettes and karate moves and dance moves and all this other stuff. And then after all of this impressive magic, dies at the end.
I believe it's important that you note, though, that she ends standing on one leg. The ultimate redemption.
Right.
She's won a cheer of triumph. Not only that, she looks down to find she has ended the fight standing on one leg. I also really appreciate this scene because, in a, again, a kind of a dark and twisty way, it really brings home how much death and destruction there is that happens here.
So much. This is something Kelly and I talked about right after we finished watching it, is you don't realize how many people die, because when you read it in the book, it's just very much yada yada, they saw a bunch of dead kids. And now, similar to the Cedric thing, now that we actually know who these kids are, they become people and not numbers, and it hurts way more.
It hurts, but it also is still done in this fast and furious kind of way that, like, bam, a kid is dead. Bam, a kid is dead. Bam, a kid is dead. Like, it's all happening, and you don't have a chance as an audience member or a reader to really process these kinds of things too, that suddenly all of these people, and they can do really incredible things, they have this character redemption arc, they're growing, they're learning, and then suddenly they're not there anymore. And I think that that really helps to bring home, and again, why I wish that Bippy had been introduced earlier, because then Bippy's death would also have that same impact, that Bippy is a real character, fully fleshed out, has a redemption arc of her own, and then again also has to experience this tragedy.
Right. So Bippy dies saying, "I am Bippy, your best friend," as they die, and talks about being there the whole time. Oliver does come in and then scream, "Who the fuck was that?" Which, very solid. So the trio then wonders if this is how Harry feels all the time, and they agree that this sucks. Harry runs by, and Wayne, very shortly after, is hit by a spell that was aimed at Harry. And Wayne wakes up in Harry's platform 9 3/4 dreamscape with Dumbledore. Dumbledore was expecting Harry, not Wayne. A little bit of awkwardness here. Wayne is then upset that he will just be known as some unnamed dead kid at a school battle, at Potter's battle. Harry gets everything that Wayne ever wanted. And he asks Dumbledore, "Why did I have to be so unimportant?" And Dumbledore has a great quote. He says, "It's easy to feel like you're a second character in someone else's story, but that doesn't mean there isn't another story out there about you," which is fantastic. I really enjoy that sentiment.
Yeah. It's a bit of a two-edged sword, right? We are all the hero of our own stories. So I can find empowerment in that, absolutely. And the idea that, right, I'm the hero. I have to do what I have to do in order to make my life important. I have to make big choices. I have to make big moves. But then the other piece of that too is that in remembering that we are our own heroes, remember all of the heroes that we're shutting out and we're not acknowledging their story too, which is ultimately, I feel like, a great piece on this, right? Mm-hmm. Imagine if Wayne had been included in this wonderful journey of 7 books that we had experienced the first time. Imagine if we got to know all of these things. And it's that human condition where we literally, it's impossible for us to know everyone's story because there's so much out there. But it's a delightful reminder to kind of think about, we don't know everyone's story. We have to treat people with empathy. We have to face the world with joy. We have to create opportunities for other people because other people are heroes too. And we need to remember that.
I also think it sends a good message of you can still be the hero of a story, and it doesn't have to be such a grandiose Harry Potter story. Like, there can still be a story about you that shows whatever personal growth you have sought after, and it doesn't have to be the most ridiculous, absurd thing in the world. You can set your own goals, and it doesn't have to be this grass is always greener thing where Wayne is always comparing himself to Harry, and he wants to be the type of person that saves the world again and again and again. And just because you don't fall to these lofty standards that you've judged or set for yourself by someone else's measures, it doesn't mean that you're not a hero, or it doesn't mean that you haven't accomplished anything. So I think it sends a nice message that we don't always have to be comparing ourselves. And it's really easy to fall into that trap, and you shouldn't do that. Just because someone else has done great things, it doesn't mean that you haven't, because you're comparing yourself to someone else that's in a completely different situation than you are.
Definitely something I think of as a teacher too, right? That I may never win a Nobel Prize. I may never win a Tony. I may never be famous in that way. But I know each and every day that I reach out to my kids and I provide a safe space for them to exist in. Even if I'm not their favorite teacher, I at least have given them solace for that day or that moment or that time. And whether they remember me 20 years down the road from here or not, I was able to make a difference in that time that I had with them. And that's something that is really the best part about being a teacher. I don't have to win a Tony. I don't have to win a Nobel Prize. I don't have to be the greatest person on the face of the planet. But the fact that I'm able to make a difference every day in somebody's life is a great opportunity that we all have.
Yeah. I mean, maybe you aren't everyone's favorite teacher, but you were someone's favorite teacher.
Yes.
And that's enough.
Yes.
And that's what's really cool.
Yep.
So Wayne asks if there's some sort of surprise and then he's going to come back to life, which I think is a fun, honest moment from Wayne, but also a way to make fun of how it happens in the book, because it is a bit hokey that Harry's dead. Okay, just kidding, not really. The power of love and this weird loophole in the Voldemort Horcrux situation means you get a second life. It's like when you're playing a video game and it says you have one life left and you die, but then you're back and it says zero. It's like, oh, cool, I actually had the one counted.
Yes.
So I like that it's a heartfelt moment that also very slightly pokes fun at the magic of the book. And Dumbledore says to Wayne, no, you're not coming back. And Wayne very sadly says, I was finally good at magic. And that's what's really sad, is that Wayne really was on this upward trajectory. And that's what makes it hurt. But not every story is going to be perfectly neat, tied, bookend. Nothing is going to go 100% according to plan.
Epilogue 19 years later, all wrapped up.
Right. Yeah. And I appreciate the Puffs had the gumption to make the main character die earlier than it would feel nice to have resolved. And it sends a nice message that not every story is going to be perfect. And that's okay. We're all doing our best.
I hate it as a reader. I love it as an editor,
yes.
Right? Kill your characters, kill your darlings, make the audience suffer. But also as an audience member, stop making me suffer.
So Dumbledore then says that the greatest magic there is, which is love, will help Wayne live on. And he awkwardly has to kick Wayne out because he's kind of expecting someone. And Wayne does ask, did I really spend 7 years at magic school to find out you believe love is the greatest magic there is? You know, it's kind of a sad moment, but also I think love being the greatest magic there is fine, because magic is pretend and love is real. But of course, Harry enters and Harry goes, wow, a train station. Oh, I'm dead. And that's the end of that scene there.
There is a brief moment, too, where after he says, yes, see for yourself, the stage directions here, it says that he checks his pocket and finds the special Puff item he and his fellow classmates were gifted after being sorted way back in year one.
Right.
He holds it tight and lightly smiles. And so that is a little bit of closure that we get in terms of the significance that love and belonging and acceptance, and it is something that we can experience. So sure, it's cool to wave a wand and jelly legs your friends, but also love is the greatest magic. It's beautiful.
Yeah. I also, in this moment, appreciated with Wayne looking at the little Puff pennant, is that Wayne was kind of the driving force to put them over the edge of their doubt. Without Wayne, they had that conversation where Megan brought up, are we really going to fight for Harry? And Wayne had the final line to convince them to go for it. After Leanne set the stage with her speech, Wayne puts the final nail in the coffin that they are going to do it and they're going to go on. So when he looks at the Puff flag, my thought was he's happy for what he helped do for his house as they are fighting for what's right.
Is it perhaps a bit dark to say that his final words are putting the nail in the coffin?
Yeah, I didn't feel great when I said it. I couldn't. The idioms are so... tied the final knot.
He seals the deal.
Seals. I should have said that. Mike Schubert, professional talker. So the narrator then comes on and says, you probably know how the rest of the story goes. And they have a brief thing where Harry, and I love that instead of Expelliarmus, it's Expelladarmus. Just something about it being slightly off makes it sound so much worse. And right after he says this, Voldemort just goes, no, and slowly peels the tape off of his nose.
I read it as Expelliarmus, which is... The root for that is skin, like the epidermis, right? And so the idea of expelling someone's skin, I thought that was funny.
That is also good. As I was saying this, I couldn't remember if it was Expelliarmus or Expelliarmus. So I'm glad that we've got both ways to interpret it.
The text says Expelliarmus. So
okay,
definitely expelling someone from their skin.
Which makes sense, because in the movie, Voldemort kind of disintegrates into a weird cloud of skin. So
yeah.
It works.
I did a baby foot the other day, which is this cool, like, really disgusting, really gross chemical peel thing that you soak your feet in.
And then
it causes your skin to peel. And I definitely thought about Voldemort the other day as I was sitting like a serial killer on my floor peeling my foot apart.
I mean, peeling stuff feels very good. I've often thought of, like, if you could just have some sort of business or warehouse where you can just do a bunch of satisfying things. Like, they have all of those laptops where you can just peel the plastic off. Ooh. You can just, like, break an expensive looking vase that, you know, is made in a way where it's not actually sharp, like it's made out of sugar or something that won't cut you. Get rid of escape rooms and replace them with, like, a room of satisfying feelings. So, you know,
bubble wrap you can just roll over.
Right. Yeah. Like, all of those things that you don't get to do often, but they feel great. And then, yeah, like, you know, peeling skin can be great, but then you have to deal with peeled skin. So, you know, a repercussion-free version of this. I would love it.
It's like the glue off your hands. Then it's not skin. It's glue.
Ah, there you go. There you go.
Yeah.
So the narrator gives a little spiel about finding the puff inside of you and then says that the last question to answer is how the narrator fits into all of this. And the way that they do it is with this quote where he says, quote, "You'll learn that in our obligatory segment 19 years later," which I love. Yes. I love on so many levels. It felt obligatory when it was put in the book. It feels obligatory that Puffs has to do the epilogue, because if they didn't, we would all want them to dunk on the epilogue. And I appreciate that this sets the stage for the whole epilogue scene is just them really, really making fun of Harry Potter. Like, they have pretty much abandoned the loving aspect of it, and it's just pure dunking for the final little bit of the play, and I love it. I love it so much.
That's because the epilogue is universally awful.
It's very universal.
It does not matter if it is the book, if it is the movie. I finished the book and was like, what a great ending. I'm super glad that everything is wrapped up as I need to. Wait, what the fuck is this? Epilogue? Yep. Mm-hmm. No! Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it is obligatory, unfortunately, and I absolutely do appreciate that it is addressing all of the issues that we have, with the exception of perhaps they don't address the idea that, you know, the bravest man I ever knew.
They make fun of poor name choices, though.
They do make fun of name choices, but the idea that both Dumbledore and Severus were the bravest man, right? Like, mm-hmm. there are so many other people that he could have had his kids named after, but really? Those two?
Rubius Remus Potter. Come on.
Yep. It wouldn't be that hard, and also would probably still be better, but no.
The two bravest people I knew, the grown adult who manipulated a child and that guy who was bad for 99% of the series.
Such bravery.
Betsy DeVos resigning with 3 days left in the presidency. What a brave soul she is.
Oh, she's just my hero. My favorite part of this, with all of the resignations that are happening, is the meme going around that talks about, like, I too have experienced that bravery when I unbuckled my seatbelt before the plane came to a full stop.
I saw a tweet, and I know you'll appreciate this as a teacher. I don't know if this was real or just a joke, was when Betsy DeVos resigned, it said, official statement from the teachers union or whatever, quote, good riddance. I don't know if that was real or not. If it was just a joke, it's a good joke.
Oh, it's definitely not real. Unfortunately, I don't think the teachers union can actually say something like that, but I'm going to guarantee you that 99% teachers also had that exact same thought.
Good, 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 good. So Draco and Scorpius walk by, and they are discussing that there's one rule for Scorpius, and they say it in unison, no time traveling. So I love that they're getting a cursed child joke in right off the bat. Then we have Megan and Oliver. Oliver comes in. Oliver in this scene is just great. He's become like a chaotic dad, and I'm so here for it. He says, you're never going to believe what Potter named his new kid. Then we get a reveal that their kid is named Wayne, named after Wayne, and it is the narrator. So little Wayne, the offspring of Megan and Oliver, grew up to be the narrator of Puffs. I think that's a very fun way to take disassociated narrator and actually make it a link and a character in the story. It's also a nice way for Wayne to live on as our protagonist that dies too soon, so that's really nice. Megan gives a heartfelt speech, and at the end of it, Oliver says, and Wayne, what's 3 times 4? And Wayne goes, I don't know. And Oliver goes, well, yeah, you don't have to worry about that either.
Still not bitter about that. Just worry about the wizarding.
So good. Oliver goes on about how he feels bad for Potter's kid. Quote, I feel bad for the guy. He's cursed. He's a cursed child. Parts 1 and 2. Now playing internationally. And after this line, Megan goes, what are you talking about? And the way that he looks off into the middle distance with this carefree smile and goes, I don't know, I'm tired, is great, and also big dad energy.
It feels a little bit like Professor Trelawney as well, right? Making that prediction, looking off into the distance, getting this information, and you have absolutely no context for what's happening with it. The other thing that I wanted to share too with the script is that the narrator is a role with no specific gender.
Good, good.
It is actually written in there. It says, the narrator is a role with no specific gender save for the epilogue scene. While the original actor in the role was male, it has not always been so. Should the narrator of a production be a female identifying actor, I offer these slightest of changes to the last scene of the play. First, change all usages of the name Wayne to Wayna.
Okay.
At which point then, these people have no idea how to name children. A pause. Oliver and Megan have a brief moment of questioning and realization. Wayna? So they are able to not only dunk on Potter for not being able to name a child, but also themselves.
Yeah. Also, you could just have a girl named Wayne. Why not? Who cares? It'd be unconventional.
Yeah, right? But the opportunity to make a twist in it, I think, is also a delightful piece.
Yeah, yeah. So then the final scene that you see in Puffs is the narrator getting sorted, and they don't explicitly say what house the narrator is sorted into. They just get sorted, and then they smile, which I think is a fun open-ended way to leave it, because you could interpret it as Wayne or Wayna got sorted into Puffs and then was happy about it, as opposed to the normal reaction of being sad or upset that you didn't get into another house. Or it could just be that Wayne or Wayna is just happy to be here, and whatever house they get sorted into, they're happy with. And I like either interpretation.
Absolutely. Which is a very Puffs response, to be happy with whatever it is and just be happy that we're here.
Mm-hmm.
But I really like the idea that we don't know either. It doesn't matter in the grand scheme of the story. We just know that there is positivity and happiness at the end. And that's really all we need.
Mm-hmm.
J.K. Rowling, and you're 19 years later. Mm-hmm. Things worked out okay. We don't need the details of the future. We don't need it. We also don't need all of the retconning that has happened on Pottermore. We don't need it. Just let your work stand.
We also don't need the transphobia either.
Ooh, yes.
That
yep.
also we could probably do without.
Oh, what a concept.
But that is the end of our coverage of the play Puffs, or Seven Increasingly Eventful Years at a Certain School of Magic and Magic. So Katie, thank you so much for joining, for discussing this play. We will have some interviews coming out later, so our talk of Puffs is not completely done, but I'm glad that we were able to spend so much time talking about this play, because it makes me happy, especially in a world now where I only want to consume fan-made or things that J.K. Rowling didn't really have a hand in made Harry Potter stuff. So this has been very cathartic for me to talk to you about it for so long. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This has been a real opportunity to dive back into how much I love this world and the idea that we can love things and be critical of them, because I think that's really important too.
Yes, I think that's important. It's what I try to do on the podcast. And I also think it's what Puffs really does at its core, is it really has the same type of mantra that I try to have with Potterless and all the stuff that I enjoy in life, whether it's basketball or video games that I like or bands, whatever. You can like a thing and be critical of it. And just because you're critical of it doesn't mean you don't like it. If anything, taking the time and the effort to be critical of something that you love and show that it does have faults and weaknesses shows that you love it that much more. Like, you love this thing so much that you are okay with talking about its shortcomings, because that's how we should interpret and accept stuff. It doesn't have to be 100% black or white. There can be some things that aren't great, and we can want things to be better. And I like that Puffs found ways to address that in a fun, comedic, lighthearted way in a very silly play that also had heartfelt moments.
We can even approach ourselves with that, right? It's important to love ourselves for who we are. It's important to accept who we are and take care of ourselves, especially in stressful times like these.
Mm-hmm.
It's so important to acknowledge those, but also recognize that none of us are perfect. We all have opportunities to grow. We all have opportunities to learn. And changing your mind or learning or growing is never a bad thing, as long as you are moving forward for acceptance and positivity and love and joy. And I think that's great.
Preach. So is there anything else you would like to promote before we sign off? Any other words of wisdom?
I think we're good, right?
Cool. Great.
Self-care, growth. Let's make that happen. Let's just continue to survive and grow and be healthy and happy in 2021.
A+. That's the message I'm going to have for myself and my plants. So Katie, thank you so much for joining on. Listeners, thanks for listening. And as they say in the wizarding world of Harry Potter, right before they say goodbye to their kid as they ride off on the train to Hogwarts, knowing that they're never going to learn math a day in their life, wizard on! Hey, is this the last episode of Potterless that you have in your backlog of episodes to listen to? Do you need something new to check out? Why don't you check out a multitude show? My voice is on a bunch of them, and I'm biased, but I think it's great. You can listen to Meddling Adults, a game show for charity where guests compete to solve children's mysteries, and the winner earns money for a charity of their choosing. Or there's Horse, where my buddy Adam Mamawala and I talk about basketball, but only the silly parts of basketball, not the boring sport part, just the drama and the goofs. There's also Spirits, where Amanda, Julia, and Eric are talking about urban legends all throughout the month of January. You've got Join the Party, which is in season two, and you've got Amanda, Julia, Eric, and Brandon having some fun role-playing goofs. And we've got Exolore, where Moya creates new worlds. There's so much fun stuff, and you can learn about all of those shows at multitude.productions. Potterless was created by Mike Schubert. It is hosted by Mike Schubert. It is edited by Mike Schubert. It is produced by Mike Schubert, as well as Vicky Garcia, Christine, Aaron Johnson, Cluster, Lopu, Marchismo, Juan Sanfilio, Rosemary, Dash Marie, Lisa C. Keen, Audra, Elnor Curlin, Nikita Power, Rachel Guthrie, Zachary Polito, Alex Consulver, John Cocker, Noel Basilet, Claire Spencer, Rory Collier, Veronica Bartova, Lada Bartova, Noah, Tracy Toya, Colleen, Jennifer Marklew, Justin Montero, Jacob Parrish, Maya Gray, Mark Boddy, Polly Burge, Zena Rosnowski, Harlan Haskins, Noelia, Nikki Harris, Kine, Amita Alfer, Kafir Shal Tiel, Sarah Shedder, Marta Morrison, Maya, Floor Sake, Georgia Davis, Skyla Lily, Adele Ryan, Professor Threat, Ellie Hoskovchova, Michael David Yordi, Kelly Otilio, Kerry Crumpler, Connie Bienkowski, Jen Wendt, Nedry OS, Will Huser, Marco Cepeda, Marique Rieger, Ashton Gabrielson, Brittany Gutierrez, Phelan the Meadows Family, Ginny from the Block, Heather Langeal, Kevin Stewart, Jarl Svivin, Pita McGrath, Jen and Rose Daub, Callahan and Daras, Leah Reed, Bella Barlack, Melanie Demi, Becca Spry, Reese Deignan, Adam Graham, Joseph Torp, Lily's Mom, Madison, Don't Call Me Nymphadora, Sabrina Balsiger, Sophia Loves Pigs, Farzan Jarabat, Melanie DeGrave, Matt Barger, Okamahime, Bony Pony, Kelsey Gillespie, Rike Mangor Jensen, Taylor Payne, Megan Moon, Riley Kiddes, Laurel Happy, Erica Butler, Miranda, Landon Schwaus, Kendra Hertz, Natanya Page, Yogan Shanley, Darcy Alexandra Harrison, Sandra Rose, Craig McRoberts, Lior Nachum, Demi Lynn, Michelle Spurgeon, Calista Delano, Jennifer Terzian, Henrika Wolf, Delkis, Katrina Smith, Casey Canales, Megan Stimpen, Zot, Jack Gitzes, Sophia Leone, Dane Nemcher, Robin Garcia, Chick Parm, Mermaid and Her Daddykins, Ilaria Vicentin, Gregory Hughes, The Real Stan Shunpei, Call Call, Mother Feathers, Nina Jazalik, Ribbon Monstrosity, Brittany Harper, Ashley Sommers, Gavin Miller, Jack Parr, Serenity Allen, Emily Quinlan, Haley Hastings, Sabrina Casanova, Jenny Browers, Laurel, Mazatov Hila, Eileen Gazesh, Annette Pipitone, Kirsten R. Cunningham, Hufflepuff Alumni, Brett Clausen, Hunter Gordon, Mary Price, Artemis, Trans People Are People, Samantha McNamara, Nina Campley, Tatiana Schmitova, Taylor Roberts, Karis Davies, Little Vomit Spiders Running Around, Tony Joe McHufflepuff, Punkfish, Rochelle Mobbs, Wire Warrior, Catherine Karolchak, Joe Sanders, Steamed Nuggets, and Can't I Potter? Web design by Kelly Schubert, and the music is by Bettina Kambamanes. If you want to find us on social media, you can at facebook.com/potterless, twitter.com/potterlesspod, instagram.com/potterlesspodcast, and reddit.com/r/potterless. For any and all information about the show, you can go to potterlesspodcast.com. Bonus content lives at patreon.com/potterless, and merch lives at potterlesspodcast.com/merch. If you want to tell someone about the show, let them know about it. Reach out to someone that you think would love the show and just say, hey, there's a show called Potterless. It's great. You'll enjoy it. Here's a link. Or you could leave a review online. Those also help as well. Thanks again for listening, and until next time, as they say in the wizarding world of Harry Potter, Wizard on!